I don't know if you probably heard this, the cinema industry is like, is literally dying. The problem we have with the film industry is like a lot of films that gets pushed out. There's a need to be real like innovation in terms of like the way films are being commissioned, films are being distributed online. This is what short film is like, is the future, I think the cure. So minute shorts essentially is like, some people describe it as like the Netflix of short film.
Okay.
I see we describe it as Spotify of short film. If it wasn't for lockdown, the business wouldn't exist. So we went for lockdown with active users, maybe 2,000 users on our platform. And the peak of lockdown were about 100,000 users. Our mission is actually to make short film as like a main form of film entertainment. In the future, I want people like to filmmakers to make short film and like to make money with short film.
Guys, today's episode is a good one. I'm joined by Jean-Vier Wette, who's the founder of Minute Short. It's a truly global platform that is helping to increase the visibility of short films. We talk about his journey, why he founded the business, and we talk about the film industry as a whole. Did you know, guys, that the film industry is dying? It is dying. Cinemas have been shutting down since COVID, and Jean-Vier talks about the plans he has in place to help revive the industry. This is such a sick conversation. To anybody who loves film, who loves TV, who loves going to the cinema, this is going to be one you do not want to miss. Now over to the show. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk to guests in the hope of inspiring you to take immediate action to find the career of your dreams. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the founder of Minute Shorts, Jean-Vier. How you doing, bro?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, man.
Bro, it's my absolute pleasure. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm same here. Like, thank you. I feel grateful to be here, man.
Bro,
yeah.
we're both happy. we're about to chop it up.
Let's chop it up. Let's go.
We like to start with a little icebreaker.
Yeah.
What did you want to be growing up, my bro?
Oh damn! So you caught me off guard. You know what? As a kid, I was so into a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I started off like the usual. I wanted to be a footballer. Then I wanted to become a musician, and then also like I wanted to be an architect design person, and also like I wanted to be a writer as well.
Okay.
And then because English wasn't my first language, so I kind of quickly disappeared because I didn't have that much words to describe stuff. So I was really into a lot of things, and most of the things I was into, the things that I just thought it was natural to me, like playing football with friends, and then like I mentioned, music or musician, because like I can play piano and guitar. Uh-huh. Okay. And drum as
oh
a flex.
My god.
Man's
flexing off in 2 minutes and he's flexing.
so then that I was like quickly, then my little brother who's actually is a producer now, so I was kind of into musician, but he was so good. I can't compete. Yeah. I let that go really quickly. And then, because it was so weird, because as a kid, I was not really competitive. So I stopped playing football because I know some kids are better than me at football. And I was like, I'm going to stop playing football.
Yeah.
And then I was almost ticking off a lot of things that people competing against me. And I was like, I can't do this because someone's better than me. And then I just kind of fell in love with film. And eventually, that's because I just love visuals and I love art. I kind of dabbled a little bit on making art and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, sick. So you fell in love with visuals. I love that phrase. Mm. But before we get into that, let's take it back. Mm. You mentioned the fact that English wasn't your first language. Yeah. Isn't your first language.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you take us on your journey, bro? Mm. Where is it you're from? And where did that love of visuals come from?
So I'm originally from Congo.
Big up Congo.
So Kinshasa, like DRC. So raised in Paris, and then I moved here when I was 14, 15. Mm-hmm. So I spoke Lingala, French, before I spoke English. And then it's the usual thing, kind of, I moved here straight to secondary school, like I literally spoke no word of English. I mean, maybe I spoke like the usual, like, hello, how are you? But I spoke literally no word of English. So as a kid, early teenager, I was kind of really quiet. Maybe in the last few years, I'm not that quiet.
You come out your show.
I come out the show because maybe they're confident what I'm doing now. But as a kid, you know, all the way up to like in my early 20s, I was kind of quiet. I kind of kept myself to myself. And that was it was also the language barriers, all this other stuff. And then, so then because of that, kind of, when I was in school, I didn't really spoke that much English or etc. So then what happened is that I really fell in love like YouTube. So I kind of, I was used to be one of those kids, like after school, I'm going home, you know, using those dial-up internet. You have to like, your mom have to shout at you every half an hour. It's like, get off the thing. I need to go back home.
Yeah.
And then so I spent a lot of time like watching like YouTube videos. So I'm literally a YouTube generation, not now, but like back in the days when, you know, I didn't really watch on my TV. And I was kind of watching loads of small clips of random videos. You know, the early days of Kanye West's music videos. There's a guy called Nubil. He directs most of his stuff in his early days. Like one, now he's like one of my good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like literally the most inspiring person. I think back then, the visual, this guy Nubil, there was like a few other directors that were making back then, is what really inspired me into like getting to visuals. Not mm-hmm. film, just visuals. I was really loving the whole kind of like artistic videos that were being made. And then, yeah, then that's kind of like what kind of got me into like more the art. But like I mentioned earlier, I was not really into art or film, whatever, at the beginning. I was more into like music and sports and other stuff. And then going to like my late teens, like early adulthood, like at 18, 19, then when I started discovering these like amazing just like stuff on YouTube and stuff, and that's when I started falling in love, and you know, just the visuals and creative videos and stuff.
And with that, so... were you watching the YouTube to learn English, or were you just watching it because of the visual, or was it a bit of everything, like for the whole experience?
Yeah, so actually, one thing I also forgot to mention as well. So like because I spent a lot of time on the internet, so I actually started a blog, okay, I'm going to test your age as well. do you remember Blogspot?
Yeah, this is before
Tumblr.
So I
had my own Blogspot kind of thing where... because I spent a lot of time on the internet, I was just kind of, I used to like post about a lot of things I was into. I was into lots of visuals, like videos. So to answer your question specifically, so I was not watching YouTube to learn English. I was watching YouTube because I just love, I don't know, I stumble across a lot of visuals I really like.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, the videos that were being made back then, like the Frank Ocean early days music videos, you know.
The Lenny Baruch collection. Lenny Baruch,
you know, even then, this is like years on. I started discovering like these music videos from like Missy Elliott, like all these like this crazy. Remember the Missy Elliott music video back in the days on MTV? These were amazing. With the 3D, all this other stuff. And then it was just like these visuals. Like to me, it was like what I was into. That was my cinema.
Yeah.
And then so I started to love music video, and eventually I started discovering these like the short form clips, like they were like short film films. But these weren't like music video, they were not like documentary, they were just like these creative short films. So and then I went from YouTube and I discovered like a Vimeo, and then Vimeo, yeah. Vimeo is like I used to be in a rabbit hole with Vimeo. I'll be on Vimeo from like 10 p.m. to like 3 a.m. just watching clips.
And then okay, so let's say you're in your late teens now, you're watching Vimeo. With all of this inspiration that you've got, like what's the next step? Is it go to university? Is it get a degree?
Yeah.
Like hone your craft?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what's kind of the pathway that
so my late teens, so like this is like when you're doing A level, it was like what are you gonna do and stuff. So like I don't know why I did this. I ended up like basically doing advertising in Brighton Uni.
Okay.
Excuse me. And then I don't know, because I was like, I didn't really know what to do. But then in my head, I was like, I just wanted to do film.
Yeah.
So almost internally, I wanted to do film, but then I did like a safe option. It's like, let me do advertising, marketing.
Yeah.
Because like, back then, I was like, I kind of did a bit of research, there's more marketing jobs. And also remember back in the days in school, like they'll be telling you like, by the way, you don't make money in creative industry.
Yeah.
You don't make money for an artist. So I was like, oh, I'm not going to be a filmmaker. I'm like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do marketing. So then I went to Brighton, and then, so my first year at Brighton Uni, and so I was going to Brighton, and then one of my best friends now, Edwin, I met him randomly in Shoreditch, like before I went to uni. So he lives in Brixton. So after the first year of Brighton, and then my summer holiday, I went back home, was in London, and then I spent a lot of time in Brixton. This story connects the dots.
Yeah, I got it.
So then, and then he at the time, Made in Chelsea, the TV show, if you remember, Channel 4 came out.
I know.
And then I spent a lot of time in Brixton with him. And I was like, well, like, I was watching this Made in Chelsea thing. And I remember that my cousin who lives in France, he called me. Every time he called me, he always laughed. He was like, by the way, you guys are so posh. And I was like, why do you say that? He goes, oh, because I've seen this stuff Made in Chelsea. I watched Made in Chelsea. I was like, bro, that's not us.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's not us. Made in Brixton. That never happened.
No, exactly. So then I wrote literally a little kind of script thing called, a little kind of literally like sentence, like trying to explain to him that there's a place called Brixton. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to make a TV show called Made in Brixton. And I ended up making this concept just to prove it to him.
Yeah.
And then this concept, and then me and my best friend end up shooting a pilot. Basically, it's like an episode.
Yeah.
Of this thing called Made in Brixton. I'm kind of downplaying it, but we hired actors. One of my friends is a filmmaker. He used to be a camera assistant for BBC. So he had access to equipment.
Yeah.
So he helped us shoot it. And my friend Edwin, he's a writer. So he wrote the script.
Oh, wow.
And I directed the whole thing. We hired like some actors. We kind of faked some scenario. Because, you know, Made in Brixton is like, it's a fake reality. We faked some scenario. So we shot this thing. And in the summer, after my first year, the summer holiday. So we shot this pilot episode. Didn't think much of it. We put out a teaser trailer on YouTube, and at the end of it said coming soon. And bro, I'm not telling you, it went viral on Twitter.
Is it?
And it went viral on Twitter, and then a lot of like national newspaper, including The Sun, The Evening Standard, Huntington Post, all wrote about it as if there's a big production company behind it. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And then Channel 4 got in touch with me, and they bought the right of it. And this is like before I went back to uni. The whole thing happened literally. It was like, let's say it happened like April. Then by the time it was like October, it was literally owned by Channel 4.
And did they make it?
And so it's like for legal reason, like basically they bought it.
Oh, okay.
Et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, so anyway, so they bought the right of it. And then I found myself working with Channel 4. I'll start working with Channel 4 while I was still at uni. So I'll go to uni and then I'll do some stuff for Channel 4.
Wow.
And then I remember my lecturer uni, they're like, oh, by the way, if you work really hard, one day you might work for Channel 4. I was like, bro, I'm working with them. I'm not even working with them as an assistant. I'm working with them as I'm developing TV show for them. I'm like in a development writer's room with them.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what got me into the film industry.
Okay. And yeah, did that give you the bug? Like that taste working with Channel 4?
Yeah, so like that was kind of like because before that I was kind of like I mentioned, I was willing to a lot of things, but then this thing was like I thought of an idea literally with no existing experience in the film industry or the TV industry, and I ended up making this TV show which went viral. The newspaper wrote about this, and Channel 4 bought the right of it. At the time it was quite good money for like, I was like what, like 19 and I was like, this is crazy. Like and then that also made me believe that I can actually, I can make film, I can make a TV show.
Yeah.
And then like I mentioned, I was still at uni and I was going to literally, it'll be like, it sounds really bad, but I was literally skipping off uni. Bro, like I don't know.
Trust me, I didn't have a deal with Channel 4. I still skip uni. So don't trust me.
I was skipping uni lectures and stuff, and I'm making excuses. Oh, but I feel I don't know. I've got a tummy bag. Just making like this long. I mean, I wish it was COVID. There was a reason back then. You're like, guys got COVID.
It was before.
But they was expecting not to come to uni like for like weeks. So I was making this excuse, and I'll go back to London. I'll be in the writer's room with loads of TV shows, like developing them and shoot some of the stuff. And then I was like, yo, I'm actually a filmmaker. I'm a legit filmmaker. I'm working with one of the big TV platform in the UK. And then in the back of that, then I started shooting commercials because I met some guy who's like a head of production on Channel 4. He ended up basically working for this production company. And he was basically he just loved the fact that I was really kind of rusty. I'm not like trained.
Yeah, you're not polished.
I'm not polished. I was like, I was one of those guys that I just had ideas, like just flying ideas. And he's like, so he after he left Channel 4, went to work for the production company. He's like, he just kept hiring me to shoot loads of commercials.
Wow.
I shot pretty much a lot of like Apple, Adidas, Nike. And also bear in mind, I went from like shooting this thing for Channel 4, I'm shooting this TV thing with like maybe five guys, whatever. In the space of a year, I found myself like in a film set with like 200 people. I'm the director. I'm like, how the fuck did that happen?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I've got so many questions to ask. The first one is, it sounds like you've always been creative. You mentioned the fact that you've always had ideas. Where did the ideas come from and how do you generate the ideas? Because I know for me, if you ask me to do something, I don't think I've got the facilities, big man.
You know what? You know
so
what?
How is it that you go, like, what's your creative process and how do you generate the ideas?
Yeah, so it's a crazy one. So, like, also another crazy thing is, like, the first and foremost, because I think I grew up in a really chill family environment. So, like, my nan brought me up, then my parents brought me up and stuff. And both to... both two people, like my mom and dad, my grandma, they never applied pressure to me. Even till this day, my mom's always like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So like, it's really kind of rare from like an African family where you're like, you need to become a doctor, my son.
That's the reason for this podcast, bro.
You need to become a lawyer, my son. Yeah. And then they start telling, it's kind of funny, sometimes you go to family parties, then the aunties are talking, they're bragging about their kids, like whatever. Like so my mom's those stuff never really applied. She never really applied pressure to us. For example, I do what I do. My brother is a musician, and my sister's the only one probably has a normal job.
Yeah,
and then my other brother's a YouTuber. So we're like, my mom always installed to us like, since we're kids, like, I want you guys to be happy, do whatever you want. And my dad's always like, kind of co-sign. My dad was like, make sure you get money.
Make sure
you get the money. So, which is good. So, a good balance. So, because of that, as a kid, I never really had that pressure. But then when it comes to kind of generating ideas, there's one thing, I've thought this a lot of time, actually. I think there's one thing, like, maybe it's also natural to me. Mm-hmm. And also, on top of that, I spend a lot of time consuming creative ideas. I used to be one of those kids that I'd just go to, like, I don't know. Because, like I mentioned, when I was young, I had maybe one or two friends. So, like, I used to just go to, like, galleries or walk around. Go to loads of galleries randomly. And then, like I mentioned, I used to watch loads of YouTube things. So when you consume loads of things...
You get the ideas.
You get ideas. And then also, those ideas are, like, innate in you. But I think there's a combination of, like, me being inspired of what I consume.
Yeah.
And also just, I think there's... Maybe, and more so, I think that's like it's naturally to me.
I love that. Yeah. What I heard there, and I think for the listener, to anybody who maybe doesn't feel creative, I think you really have to be obsessed.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't say it, but when I hear 10 p.m. to 3 a.m., I'm hearing obsessed.
I'm obsessed.
When you say Vimeo, I'm like, what? Yeah.
I'm one of those people, like, I always say this, I'm not really into a lot of things, even though I mentioned at the beginning. So if I'm into something, I'm into it. Like, my friends know me, I'm into it. So even to this, my best friend, Ish, so the other day, so we're kind of like, it's one of my first friends when I moved to London. So recently, I was like, let's do some stuff together. Okay, let me bring it in. Like, let me bring it to, like, some of my collaboration stuff I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so we had a meeting with his partner. And in the meeting, it's like, John Vier is one of those guys. He's really not into something, but he's into it.
He's into it.
And he's, as a kid, obviously, he was telling his partners, like, even when we were kids, he's one of those guys, like, he's into something, he's, like, he was obsessed with it.
Mm.
So I think... That something is that I'm always like that, yeah.
You are obsessed. Yeah. And then the other bit I want to touch on. So it sounds like you've always had, like, a little bit of a connection, right? So you had the person who worked at BBC.
Yeah.
You had the person who I think you said was a writer.
Yeah, look at my friend. My friend's a writer.
So I suppose where I'm going with it, to somebody who's listening to this and maybe they don't have that connection from the start, obviously you were able to shoot that trailer pilot. To anybody who wants to get their foot in the door, do their first project, like, what would your advice be to them?
So I think first and foremost, I think, you know, it's crazy. I think if you ask me this, like, maybe 2 years, my answer would be different. But I think now with a bit of experience, I think, try to create a genuine, friendship with people. So, for example, like, my friend is a writer, he's like my friend, so, like, we just met randomly in Shoreditch. She used to work at this old Topman in Shoreditch years ago, and he just looks like, if you see him, he literally looks like a stepped out in the 70s, you know, leather jacket,
yeah,
whatever. So he's like, so I thought he was really cool, and I had a camera at the time, I was taking pictures of people randomly in Shoreditch, and I was like, bro, wow, you're so amazing, and we became friends from now. And then the other guy who's my friend, who knows how to use a camera, he's a cameraman. We met from like this film, like after school film club thing.
Yeah.
I'm proper nerd. Like we used to like just go to the film club, like talk about films. So we became just friends.
Obsession.
obsession. There we go. Like proper like obsession. Like initially it's like, oh, you know, I'm not taking enough of Vimeo. So let me actually go to a film club. So we just became friends at this film club, and we used to like literally, we meet up and we talk about films all the time. And so we just like, there's a genuine friendship, which our friendship is like film, and the other guy, Edwin, because we both love music and stuff. So then when it came to ideas, sometimes, like, so at the time, let's say this, I'll give you an example of these two people. So when it came to when I was thinking this idea of Middle Brixton, I was like, I know a friend who's a writer. Mm. I said, I know a guy who's a cameraman. And when I asked them, by then I asked them, we're already friends. So it was kind of easy. So it's like, when I reached out, I said, oh, by the way, I've got this idea. He's like, cool, you're my friend, let me do it. And I found that a lot, that friend kind of approach, it happens a lot with like a current, even now with my business and stuff, which I'm going to get to.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of partnership boils into that. Literally a friend of mine who was a friend we met years ago, and he was reaching out and said, oh, is that bro? Like, I haven't heard it from a while. Like, by the way, I'm XYZ, there's a brand that's willing to put this on the table. You're the first person I thought of. I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Vice versa as well.
No, I hear that. So basically the takeaway I have from that is like, let's say, like you said, you know, you didn't have many friends maybe initially when you were a teenager, but you've put yourself in positions to meet people, and you're not just meeting people to meet people, you're making genuine friendships.
Friendship, yeah, it's a genuine.
So to the listener, go and find your tribe, whether it's, that person looks cool on the street, whether it's the film club, go and find like-minded people, because you're going to be able to experiment with them. And then once you experiment with them, the world is your oyster, and anything can happen off the back of
it. I mean, this is the same thing, like when you meet rich people, like most opportunities comes from their friends. They're like, you know, you meet them, they're like, oh, by the way, my friends, we went to the same school with, he's the head of like Saatchi. Then he's like, oh, okay, cool. Then he's like, oh yeah, I just kind of reach out to him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I wanted to like put some deal on the table. That's the same thing that literally, I think my whole career is always like, things I'm into, I put myself in a situation of meeting those people. So if I'm into film, I go to cinema, I'll go to like a film film screening events, and I'll go to like film clubs. Even till these days, I still go to like film clubs. Like
I
love it. I'm a consumer I go to film club, I go to film screening events so I can just meet people, because I love, when I was young, I was kind of almost in shell of myself, but now I'm like, old, I'm getting more open.
You're like a butterfly.
Literally, I'm out all the time,
I love it. We've digressed, but I love it. Yeah. So you had the directing jobs. Let's just say you finish university, you get the degree. Where is it you go to next?
So after that, I started to just like, I was freelancing most of the time. And
is that as a director?
As a director, as a self-shooter, they call it. So you shoot and direct at the same time. That's what I did for Vice.
Okay.
So my advice is this, to a lot of creative people, before you get into your full-time job, please just like freelance, experiment a lot of things that you're into. And crazy thing now, I think freelancing now is probably easier, because there's more, you know, you have the social media to find jobs and stuff. Back then, you have to know people.
Yeah.
So after left uni, all the other stuff, I started freelancing as a self-shooter, directing, producing. So commercials, like I mentioned, and I kind of float around to a lot of things. I shot some stuff in America. Then eventually, I end up at Vice. At Vice, I was still freelancing, but almost like I was there all the time.
Yeah.
So it was the best thing ever. Was freelancing, but you're
getting the freelance money.
Yeah, you're getting freelance money. You're there 5 days a week. So you're getting paid like really well.
Yeah.
So I was there literally for, I don't know how long, for like 3 years maybe.
Wow.
And I was like shooting loads of this documentary. I mean, if you know Vice, you know the stuff.
Bro, I was talking to you. Oh, it's man. Like, the epidemic in Atlanta. The cartels of Colombia.
Yeah. These guys, so back then it was wow. Just like literally. So it's quite crazy. Like, so one of my first projects at Vice was I pitched that day. So I went to Japan. with my ex, like when I was like 21 or something. And I loved Japanese culture. I was like, wow, this is amazing, whatever. And I discovered this, that there's like this massive dancehall scene in Japan. And,
okay.
And it was crazy. Even recently, I saw a clip.
I saw that clip.
Yeah. I'm like, bro, this gonna haven't stopped. It's still going. This is like years ago, over 10 years ago. I remember like, so me and my ex, which like, you know, in Turkey, was kind of driving around, whatever. Then we end up in this like an underground club, and we're like, they had a lingo, the dance. I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
Bro, I think the clip I saw, it was Amapiano.
Yeah, it was Amapiano. And also, even the grime scene is massive, whatever. So back then, so I ended up listening to underground thing. They had literally even a lingo. I was like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then this obviously like a bang to my head that I did, whatever. Years later, I end up like Vice. The first idea is like, I wrote on a piece of paper. I went to the guy, head of commission and Vice. I was like, bro, this is the idea. We should shoot a documentary about dancehall in Japan. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, I was in Japan shooting it.
Wow.
And then, I ended up just like shooting loads of stuff for Vice. I shot one called Blood Diamond in Central Africa, which is like crazy.
Oh wow!
And that was like a life threatening, because you have to be escorted by the UN. It was just like mad.
So you went to like a mine where they actually make the...
Yeah, it was mad. I mean, so we actually didn't go to the mine, but it was like, it's a weird, so you can see those documentaries. Basically, there's like these two tribes, mm-hmm. they're fighting because of the religion thing. That's mm-hmm. what they were kind of saying it, but they were fighting because this land had...
The diamonds
and stuff. And then we kind of did an investigation. And then when we do an investigation, we're shooting loads of stuff, then it kicked off.
Wow.
And then the UN literally is like, you guys need to leave like now. Don't leave your cameras behind. Leave now.
Really?
Yeah.
So my question on that, when you're filming in another country, like how big is the team? Is it you on your own?
No. So there's, yeah. So for example, that one, there was maybe 15 of us.
And you're in charge of everyone?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, also I'm African. So it's like, it wouldn't be not right. To get someone to what do you do? And I'm like, bro, step aside. Like, this is my...
I like it.
Yeah.
So you're in charge of the 15 people at quite a young age.
Yeah.
Like first question is, how did you feel being in charge of people who I'm presuming were older than you typically?
To be honest, I think it's a weird, because a lot of my early days career kind of fast tracks, so it was almost I didn't have time to like
process
thing. It's literally like I'm there now, let me just do it. For example, the channel four thing I mentioned in the beginning, that happened, I was like 19, 20.
Yeah.
So I was like, I sort of think for channel four now, I'm working with channel four, so there's not a lot of kind of processing, there's not a lot of kind of like, oh, by the way, this person's,
you gotta earn your stripes,
you have to earn your stripes, whatever. Yeah. I'm like, I'm here now, just kind of have to get used to it.
Yeah.
I see, literally, also like, it's a weird one, I look so young as well. Yeah. So at the time, literally, I was like, I remember like, I still get it to this day. It's weird things. Sometimes when I go to meetings, like, they're like, oh, are you the CEO? I'm like, yeah, I am. Sure.
Yeah.
So back then it was like, literally, I've been a film set. And then they'll be like, oh yeah, where's the director, the point? And you can see people's face like, well, is it a guy? I was like, yeah. So I'm used to it. And also there was not a lot of processing. There's a lot of kind of like, I can do the job. Mm-hmm. So, and also, you know, I've never really had a bad crew that I worked with. So most of people is always respect. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of kind of like a creative industry I find is like, if you can do the job amazing, people's like, no one cares about your age. It's like, I was basically that, yeah.
So you're like,
I let my work.
You sound like Messi, bro. Yeah. The Messi of the creative industry.
Yeah, literally. I just let my work do the talk.
There we go. I like that.
Not
like
long
that.
Thing.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about. So you were young, but then representation. Right, so you know, people were taken aback. Maybe it's because you were young, and maybe black. Because you were also the only person who was black.
Yes. The reason also I started my company, which we're gonna get to it, is that's another reason. So my frustration is a lot of the creative industry, especially in the film industry and TV. It was like, I used to be in a lot of places. I look around, I'm like, yo, I'm the only black person here, and there'll be a show that's shot about this, the shooting about black experience. I'm like, why are we doing this? And there's literally a percentage, 1% of the people on the crew is black.
Mm.
So there's a lot of kind of like those uncomfortable situations you're in. But those uncomfortable situations, you kind of like, I put my foot down. It's like, this is what, I'm here. So you guys are going to have to get used to it. Like,
And from your perspective, why was representation, because it's a bit better now, like yeah. I've had Ola Christian, he's the CEO of LaVille, and he's big obviously helping with representation, big up Ola. Why do you think representation was so poor back in the day?
I think there's a combination of a lot of things. Opportunities were not given to people. If opportunities were given, they'll give you like opportunities, you're the assistant or something. And then also like there's not a lot of ownership of our own stuff. And then for example, all of what he's doing now, he has leverage to like talk to certain companies. Oh, by the way, if I'm coming to work with you, I've got something you need for me.
Yeah.
So I think now a few of us start owning things. So there's a bit of like a different conversation we're having about brands and stuff. Mm. And then also I think also there's the lack of education as well, and representation have been shown to us on media. So like, for example, now you can see like there's a lot of criticism in terms of like back then it was like the only thing you see on TV black guys being hood. Now it's like those stuff, if you see it, you get shut down really quickly. Now we're all about black joy, black success, black order, excellence, if you call it. And so I think there's a representation of the media that we've shown to us, lack of opportunity, lack of ownership. And also on top of that, because we didn't really have those things, there's not also a lack of confidence within ourselves. Mm. So confidence in the sense of being in a space where when you feel something's uncomfortable, just say something. And even I've been also a victim myself with that. I didn't feel confident to say some things. But now, obviously, bro,
times have changed.
Times have changed, my friend.
Funny you say that because I'm like, is it like because of the generation of our parents who like immigrated here? Because they want us to become doctors, become lawyers. If you say, hey, mum, I want to work... My friend, you better just go and do your mathematics.
You know what's crazy? Like I had this conversation with someone before about this. Like, so here's the thing. So our parents, when they came to this country, is to survive. Mm. So most of us, actually, when you look at it economically and whatever, we're not surviving. We're actually contributing. There's a thing called Black Pound. I don't know if you heard about this. Black Pound?
Yeah, I've heard of Black Pound.
So basically, we as current people, our generation, we're contributing financially in this country as much as any... white demographic stuff. So then there's a sense of a lot of us now is like, we're not here to survive. We're not here like, oh, by the way, I'm here temporarily. Because that's our parents. And the parents came out, let me stay here, make a bit of money, send it back home, or go back home. But no, we're here to stay.
Yeah.
So I think that shift, maybe when the way we went from our parents to us, that shifts. And I think by the way, if I'm here to stay, that means that there need to be a lot of things that need to be shifted differently. Mm. That means that the way we get shown, the opportunities get given to us, trickle down to us, it needs to be equally spread out.
So we're
not here to with the same mindset. That's probably another thing. So our parents came in, our parents and older brothers, maybe our uncles, their mindsets were different. Because of that, they didn't really feel they need to put the foot down to certain things. But now we're here to stay. We're here to kind of contribute. We're here to, be... actually
active members of society
financially, infrastructurally, all this other stuff. That means that's what there's a lot of pushback to our generation. We need to be seen a certain way, we need to give them respect, certain way. Opportunity to be given us a certain way.
And on that, by the way, well said. I love it. Do you feel a sense of responsibility, and maybe now is a good time to talk about the origins of minute shorts and just helping to increase that representation.
I think it's a crazy one, because when I started Minute Shorts, I started with a different mindset. I think there's much more egoistic mindset, which is now it's different. So when I started, I was the reason I started because like we mentioned before, I was in film crew. I was just there's not enough stories I've told about us. There's not enough representation in the crew. And I used to go to film screening events with including BBC, all these other people. You're on a film screening, you're like, where's people?
It's a bit light in here.
Yeah, the light's a bit too harsh here. there's not enough. Where's representation of us? So, and then at the time, before I started my company, I shot a short film. I sent it to loads of film festival. It got rejected. And I was like, what?
You knew it was good.
I knew the film was good. I wrote it this is me. This is amazing. So I was like, I was kind of almost a big FU to, I think I was like, I'm going to start my own film festival and I'm going to accept films that get rejected. So I started with almost like an egoistic kind of thing. I'm like, okay. This is like a payback to the way I got treated for this. But now, fast forward, as time went on, so when we developing the product, which I'm going to explain what the company is in a bit. When we started developing the company, and we then eventually I started to see how much influence, contribution, or responsibility this is having in the communities.
Yeah.
So like before, I used to say, oh, it's my company. I was like, it's not my company. I think it's everyone's company. People I work with daily, you know, my business and my co-founders. The filmmakers, our partners, our users, or all these other, the venue we work with, all these other people, is all of our companies.
Yeah.
And because of that, I feel like it's a sense of responsibility that this company, the film we showcase, the film, the people we work with, all the film screening we run, the platform, it has to look exactly the way the world we see outside, in like in Hackney.
Yeah.
So it has to be like a multicultural, it has to be real representation.
And do you feel like, so in the films that were, you know, making it to film festivals, mm. they were all of like a similar style.
Oh, mate. That's still the problem genre. Now.
Yeah, it's still the...
There's still a problem. So we literally, we have beef with a lot of people. Not beef, like in the sense, like we clashed a lot of companies establishing film institutions. I'm not going to throw them in some of the name under the bus because I don't want... I've had enough lawsuits into me. Like, even this year, I had enough. Like, I'm not spending normal money. So when it comes to... So the problem we have with the film industry is like a lot of films that gets pushed out is the same story. Pure drama. We've seen enough pure drama, bro. Like I don't want to see any more Macbeth. I've seen it all. I've seen a different version of it. It was a pure drama in 2024. Like what is going on? So like, so there's a lot of these stories and also a lot of like, we just see a lot of this film, like the remake of the same film.
Bro.
And then what they do really well here is, every year, they give one film, a black film that gets commissioned, and then they're like, oh, this is what we've done for you for representation. So last year it was Ryan Lane.
Mm.
You remember the film Ryan Lane?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the year before, I can't remember. There's like every year, there's always like one film, one black film. Like, this is him. This is what we've done, and then so they can shut everyone up. And we're like, no, that's not it. Like, let's look at the quota, the way you're commissioning films. I'm talking about feature film, not short film. Commission films, and let's make a fair commission infrastructure. You know, you're giving money to X amount of like a black community, black directors, Asian directors, you know, Arab directors, you know, white directors. It needs to be like shared equally. But what tends to happen is like the commissioners are giving the same, they're giving majorities from our data we have, like over 90% is going to the same. Not the same, going to the same story, like white directors.
And is that because it's what works? So like they look at the analytics and like, if you look at like the Avengers as an example, we know that superhero, evil person, space, some powers, we know that it's easy money.
Yeah.
Just like with like the repurposing, like Batman.
Yeah.
If I see another Batman, I'm going to faint.
Yeah.
How many? Is it because, but they know that Batman slaps.
Okay. So, so the problem is that actually recently the data has gone against that now. So before, repurposing things that works and stuff, you know, the remake of lots of things.
Amen, so, by the way. I'm one of them. Yeah. It doesn't work.
It doesn't actually work because like people feel like they're watching the same thing. And then number two is like, so the film industry is run by like an old white man, old school business model.
Is that the Hollywood Foreign Press?
It's run like, basically, the reason why the UK hasn't really, the UK film industry, they don't really take that much chance because like, they're playing it safe.
Okay.
But the problem is like, I don't know if you probably heard this, the cinema industry is literally dying. A lot of cinemas have been closing down since lockdown.
Yeah.
Because people are like, why would I go to cinema? I can watch stuff on Netflix,
true.
Amazon,
or you can stream it. Home premiere.
And then one of my friends actually texted me the other day. Goes, like, bro, you know you can get this like a box, like you pay like.
Hey, no, you can't. Don't get us lost.
Not me.
I've
got enough blows into my hand again.
I'll pay my Netflix.
Exactly. There's all these like entertainment where people can watch films in their own comfort zone. So why should you leave the house and go to the cinema? So the film and the cinema industry is dying. Like there's loads of cinemas dying. And people like they're blaming it to, oh, by the way, it's because people like don't want to leave the house. People don't want to leave the house because it's the same old thing.
Yeah.
So this cinema is dying. Eventually, if the film industry, like as in like an infrastructure, but the way they distribute films, like the way they finance films and stuff, a different storyline, especially I'm talking about the UK, if they're not careful, it's going to be like a dying industry. Mm-hmm. We already start seeing a lot of I'll give an example. A lot of our black actors, what did they do? They all go to America.
Shout out Damson Idris.
Yeah.
Shout out Daniel Kaluuya.
Exactly.
You, man.
Exactly. And, fantastic films. And Kane was going to the States as well. So and then Michaela caught another one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a good friend of mine. So she's in New York now. Like none of them are here because why? Because the way the film industry here is set up is old school. And they're playing it safe. They're like, oh, you know, as long as we can make like X amount of money every year, we're good. We don't want to take no chance.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, you know, American, the way they work, like they just take chance. Like, they're like, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Yo, man, we're going to do this, man. That's my bad American accent impression. So let's take chance. And also with the new development of like social media or this platform, there's a need to be real like innovation in terms of like the way films that we commission, films being distributed online, whatever. And we start seeing it slowly, it's getting better. There's a guy called, I don't know if you've heard of this TV show called Dream Whilst Black?
No, I haven't.
It's like, it's a BBC TV show. There's a guy, I can't remember the name on top of my head. He got commissioned from the BBC for the second season. Supercell is a good example as well.
Yeah.
So obviously that's a good example, but we need to see more of this.
Yeah.
More of this, like, you know, stepping out the comfort zone, actually giving money to ideas isn't just like the same
because
old idea.
It bangs.
So the bangs. Yeah. And I'm hoping in the back of this, big up Ratman, also big up all this team. And, you know, I'm hoping in the back of this, there's a trend of like where they can commission more of this kind of like young, you know, black filmmakers they just want to give their, you know, Supercell as an example, as a concept, it's sickle cell, Supercell. And I just like, yeah. That, I remember when the penny dropped, I was like, wow, yeah. This is amazing.
And one of my friends, who's actually been on this podcast, mm. Maria, mm. She suffers from sickle cell. Mm. So it's like, it is so prevalent in African American people.
Exactly. And then you get feel seen as well. You're like, yeah. You know, these are like a condition, like, you know, for black people, like you get seen. And yeah. There's so many beautiful, amazing, interesting side of us as black people we haven't been able to experience. Yeah. We haven't been able to like showcase it on film because we've only been told like you're only allowed to do this.
Yeah.
If you do anything outside of that,
no. Yeah.
So I'm hoping this is a message to all the kind of commissioners, white commissioners watching this. Mm-hmm. Give finance and let people do what they need to do, yeah. And you get stuff like Supercell.
I love it. And just on that, I know you've just said that, but you know, you said something so deep, like the film industry is dying.
Mm.
My question to you, what's the cure?
I reckon literally the cure is short films.
Okay.
So here's the thing. So the current generation, so like I'm talking about the young Gen Z, maybe Gen Alpha. So my brother's 19, don't kill me if I might get your age wrong. 19. So he's been to the cinema maybe once. Also, I remember trying to take him to the cinema recently. He's like, he said he has no interest.
Wow.
So all his friends ask him that. I ask him, what do you, I literally work with all the cinemas in London. Like, I was like, I'll give you guys cinema tickets all the time. I can send a lot of cinema tickets. I can also, if you want, I could put you guys in a private cinema to watch film. They're like, nah, we don't want to. And I was like, there's anything that they have zero interest going to cinema. That's one thing. And then number two is, we talk about attention span.
Yeah.
Right? So our generation, we might be okay because like we grew up like pre-social media and then we kind of, you know, we can bear to sitting down for 2 hours watching a film. We knew how it felt when we were kids.
Bro, I'm telling you, I was trying to watch The Boys the other day.
Yeah.
I'm on my phone.
Exactly.
So my attention is going. Even me, bro.
Maybe worse. Exactly.
Ours is going. Ours exactly. is going. So we might be there, but we're struggling.
Exactly. So the attention span is also, is literally on the floor. So like people's attention span is wrong. Is that bad? And then this is what short film is like, is the future. I think the cure. So when you have a generation who, the attention span is wrong, is really bad. And I watch stuff in a sequence even. I watch like I watch a film. I watch like a 20 minutes here, take a little break on my phone. Da, da, da. So if you can be given 20 minutes short film
to watch the whole
thing, then you go for the rest of the day. That's what it is. And there's that, and there's also the tension spam is helping, because you could focus on like 20 minutes, you watch something like interesting and go on with your day. And then why short film is interesting, because number one, financially is viable, because you're not having to put up 20 million to make a film or a million to make a film. Making a film like for like, I don't know, 100K at most, maybe 200K at most. And then short film is also like one of those medium that is flexible, because you can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your, when you're traveling to work, on the commute, you can watch it on the airline. You can watch, it's like it's flexibility of places you can watch it. Another thing is like, because the money is not huge, what tends to happen is like, there's a lot of creative freedom. So you get like a diverse of storylines. Storylines that would not be made into features, because features, like there's a lot of kind of like, let's long out the story, because we need to fill this gap of minutes, whatever. Where this one is like, you've got 20 minutes, we're making an amazing film, we're going to get straight to the point. And because of that, it's also like, there's also less of like restrictions, like, oh, by the way, you need to include this, 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 and like, you just need to tell your story. Yeah, so there's a lot of kind of like diverse of storyline, diverse of like creativity.
Okay.
Which then brings a fresh new things in cinema or film we don't really see. I think that's the cure.
Yeah.
And in cinema as well, I've got, in cinema specifically, so cinema as a medium, as we always know it. By the way, I talk a lot.
I'm captivated. Honestly.
I'm passionate about this thing.
Good. Yeah, let's go.
I've been deep diving into this thing for like years. Like, and so with cinema, so I always compare like a different creative sector to cinema. So music. The music industry has evolved multiple ways. You have streaming, you go to music concert. I went to Beyonce's concert like last year when she was doing a London thing?
Yeah, I think it was last year.
Oh, mate, like, I was not a Beyonce fan, but I came out with my ex, I was like, bro, I'm a beehive. Yeah. I'm a legend, I'm wearing a badge. Her stage design was unbelievable. Before we get to the music, her stage design was like, in itself, it was like storyline.
Yeah.
So stage design is amazing. The costume is amazing. The performance is amazing. Even if you're a Beyonce fan, you're like, it's like, I'm going to go see her. I'm not just going to listen to her. I don't want to just listen to her music.
It's a production.
It's a production. So there's incentive for you to go and to go and see this person, to leave your house and go see that person. In cinema, what is the sense for me to like, let's say there's a new Batman comes out. There's a new Batman comes out. What incentivized me to go to see new Batman, where I can wait maybe like in a month's time, I watch this on Netflix.
Yeah.
Or think there's not the reason for it, like, well, I'm going to go sit in a dark room and watch the film for 2 hours and I'm go home. Then it's like, there's more to that. The cinema needs to do more to give users the reason to leave the house to go to cinema. So because of that, I've got this like weird, I'm still kind of constructing it together, like this blueprint, ideas that I kind of been knotting down with a good friend of mine, S. Devlin. She's amazing.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay, S. Devlin does the stage design for pretty much everyone, to like Kanye.
Wow.
Billie Eilish to, she did what's it called? Super Bowl. She does Super Bowl as well, stage design.
If you're listening to this, we want you on. Yeah. You come tell your story next, yeah?
I'm going to get
Hashtag obsession.
She's like the godmother of stage design.
Bro, okay, let's do it, bro.
She's the creative director for the Olympic 2022 in London.
Is it?
She is like big.
Wow.
So,
Estee Evelyn.
E-S.
E-S.
Devlin.
S. Devlin. Okay. S. Devlin.
So I met her like years ago, and then we kind of chop it up and stuff. But then I reconnected with her like 2 years ago, and then we're talking about this idea of cinema, you know, like cinema's dying, what do we do? And so I come up with this idea, is like a cinema basically needs to take the approach of like architect design or stage design into cinema. What that means is like, you go into a cinema, instead of just like a cinema sitting down and watching film, they need to be like projectors, you know it's kind of like an installation where
you want to make it immersive.
Immersive cinema.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And also, play around with cinema. Like, cinema is not just a place to go watch film. So cinema needs to be like a space where you meet communities. So for example, let's say Rio Cinema in Dalston. That space, they can have the cinema room, whatever. There needs to be also a space where there's like chess nights. There's, pottery nights. There's like writing class, whatever. So it becomes a real community. People to go there for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave my house to go watch film because I think I can watch in a month's time. Okay, now films, literally, they're going streaming like literally the same day, especially Disney films.
Yeah.
Like, Disney Plus is going the same day. So like, what makes you think I'm going to go spend my money in the cinema. So there needs to be a reason to give people that.
Yeah.
Next thing. And also another thing the cinema can also do is that, you know, for short films, for example, let's say you buy a ticket for 2 hours. There's like maybe in the cinema, there's like 5 rooms. There's like a room for like horror films, comedy films, drama, documentary. Then that 2 hours gives you access to spend 20 minutes in horror, 20 minutes in comedy, et cetera, et cetera. So you pick and choose. But
it's a good idea, but that one there could be an overcrowding issue. Because let's say there's one that people like more than the other. But let me not knock your ideas, these ideas are sick. And it's going to save cinema. But we digressed. Where we were going, and I can't believe we've not spoken about it. Minute Shorts.
Yeah, Minute Shorts.
Tell me.
What is Minute Shorts?
I introduced you as the founder of Minute Shorts, and we ain't got there yet.
We ain't got there halfway
minute
through.
Minute Shorts. Talk to me, bro. Like, what is... what is the company about?
Yeah,
you kind of spoke about the origins.
Yeah,
but yeah, give us more of an insight.
So, Minute Shorts essentially is like some people describe it as like the Netflix of short film.
Okay,
I see we describe it as Spotify of short film. The best way to explain it is like it's a streaming service that allows people to watch these incredible short films from around the world.
How long are short films typically?
So films on average are 10 minute long we have on our platform, but then the maximum is at 25 minutes.
Okay.
There's like one or two films above that a little bit, which kind of like let it slide. Cause like, yeah. And it's like, but then on average that 10 minute long. And then as we mainly focus on like the next generation of filmmakers, cause we believe the next generation is the people gonna change the film industry, the way films are made, the stories that's coming through. So we focus on the average age, probably like 28 years old filmmakers.
Okay.
But then we're not ageist. So like we do have filmmakers in our platform that are way older than us. Like Nabil, he's got his film there. Skeptic's got his film there. Obviously, he's not in his 20s.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Tribal Mark?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we do, it's a streaming service. We also do, what they call distribute films. We distribute films. So it's an app you can watch on, it's available on a mobile app. It's also websites. We also distribute films on airlines, American Airlines, Jetlag Canada, and we distribute films on Britannia Ferries, a cruise.
Oh, wow.
And then we recently signed a deal with this company called FreeSS. We're going to start distributing films in cars in 2025.
Hopefully only in the back seat.
not on the front seat. No, we'll get sued quickly. Yeah. Literally, like I mentioned, so there's a new, there's electric cars coming out, and most of them are going to have like... the backseat entertainment.
Okay.
And so that we're going to distribute films in like loads of cars in we'll start off in the UK, but then we're going to start expand it out.
If I had to, you're the founder, what is the mission of Minute Films?
So our mission is essentially to become like a global platform, like your Netflix or Disney, that, you know, people can discover films, can discover talents, and also start commissioning talents globally. I'm talking about, we go to Mozambique, we finance filmmakers, we set up a cinema there, we distribute their films. Like, we want to be a global platform for not just like viewing films, but also for building communities around the world, specifically in film, and also financing and, you know, distributing their
films. I love that. And speaking to you, am I right in thinking that if you want to become a director, typically you would start by making short films? So you're kind of like... almost like the feeder club. So if it was football, you play for the youth academy and then you get called up to the big... Do directors cut their teeth in the short films because they can express themselves completely creatively and then that gets the opportunities for the big films?
I really like that question, actually. So what tends to happen is a lot of filmmakers, they make films as like a short films as a stepping stone to make the feature or TV. So it's like it's a proof of concept. That's what everyone calls it.
Yeah.
So we're coming in, we're like, bro, if it's good, why are we calling a proof of concept?
Yeah.
It's like, for example, like, again, I'll use this analogy because I love music so much. Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Before he made, so he was massive, just releasing mixtapes. So think of like short film is based on mixtapes. And then feature films like album. So we're now on the stage right now. If your mixtape bangs, why wait? Why are we saying it's a mixtape? So to the point right now, actually, I try to tell a lot of people, like a lot of filmmakers, including musicians, like you should call yourself just projects. Don't try to label like a mixtape or short film, whatever.
EP, whatever.
It's good, it's good. Chance the Rapper is a great example where he became good, just, and he became successful and, you know, and became popular, just mixtapes as big as any rappers around the world. Yeah. So what we're trying to, so our mission, I'm just added to that as well. Our mission is actually to make short film as like a main form of film entertainment. In the future, when people like to, filmmakers to make short film and to make money with short film. Another thing short film doesn't do is people don't make money from short films. Mm-hmm. Before us, essentially, I think we actually the blueprints of how to make short film.
Or how to make money from short film.
We had to make money from short film, historically speaking.
Wow.
People in the past, they made a bit of money here. Like, it's like a little trickle down here then, but there's not an actual real infrastructure, how to distribute films, how to make money, whatever. So we're coming in and we're like, this is a medium we believe it can be financially viable with the right business model, with the right infrastructure. So we're almost starting from scratch, from like something like a complete from scratch. We start setting up a little like business model, business infrastructure, the way we distribute films, the way we build community from film screening events. So then we can grow this business eventually, start getting brands to pump money into this industry. And in the future, in the near future, filmmakers, there won't be need for you to like to make feature film to make money or to make feature film to feel validated as a filmmaker. You can make a short film, then it goes global, everyone's watching, it's getting millions of views, you're making money from it, you are validated as any filmmaker that's making a feature film.
I hear that. So I'm going to ask this question, then good. You might laugh at me. Yeah. Are you going to set up your own awards show to bring it all the way back?
No, you know what? You know, I don't want to say never. You know one thing I learned? I can never say never. But if you ask me this, like I was like, nah, we're not setting up an awards show. You know what's funny? Like even recently, we did like our first kind of festival a few weeks ago. Last year, I was like, we're not doing a festival, man. We're doing a streaming service. We're out here. But then an opportunity came. I was like, oh, you know what? I went to a few film festivals. Like, these guys are not doing it right, man. Let's show them how it's done.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's not on a forecast. It's not like, because one thing we also try not to do is like, if you're going on a platform, there's not like buttons. There's not a viewership that is shown. So only filmmakers themselves, they get those data.
So that's like raw. Because if people watch it, they'll watch it.
They'll watch it. Exactly.
Seeing a like, throwing a like.
No, exactly. Yeah, we want people to love something because we love it. And so we don't show those kind of analytics to like viewers, but we show it to the filmmakers. So like, they need it for like their work or all this other stuff or to raise money even. Mm-hmm. So another thing my award short does is like it kind of creates groups. It's like, oh, by the way, this good, this is good, this is not good. And the reason I start to manage is actually to remove that. Mm-hmm. To remove that. If it's good, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So ask the question, I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be awards show made.
I'm joking.
And maybe also another thing, like I haven't really like put my focus in terms of what tends to happen most of the time, like even the festival thing is like, I start noticing like, I don't really like the festival.
So I'm going to do it myself.
I'm going to do it.
You're a doer.
Yeah.
There are people who talk and there are people who do.
Yeah.
You do, bro. You get stuff done.
Yeah, so I haven't really looked into the world show that well. So like maybe if I start paying attention to them, I might be like, nah, man, let's do it.
Another thing I wanted to ask about Minute Short. So how many users are on the website and is it free?
Yeah, so it's free till October. I think October. So we're releasing the new version of the platform. This is the version we always wanted to release, actually. So it's in the last, like, the company's been around. So one thing I didn't mention, we launched the company 2019.
Oh, just before COVID.
So let me tell this story really quick before I answer the question.
Please do.
Launched in 2019, and the first year is we did everything you're not supposed to do running a business. literally, it was a checklist of not to do. We did every single one of them. We're like, spend money on this. We had our own office, like a huge office. We said spending money is ridiculous. And then at the end of like 2019, we ran out of money. We're like, damn. But okay, then me and my business partner, we met in January 2020. But like, bro, I told my business partner, bro, like my life was good before this. I'm just running out of money. We need to close this business.
Yeah.
And I wanted to close the business. I said, Julian, we need to close this business. He's like, oh yes, let's do it. But then he's like, this idea is good, man, bro. No one is doing it. Like, he convinced me. He's like, literally, he's like, yeah, we're keeping it.
Wow.
And then he's like, how much you got? I was like, I literally got like 5K. He's like, I got 5K as well. Like, put it, but like, literally, like, my last 5K, literally, when I'm swapping your bank, like, I literally wiped out my bank.
Yeah.
Here's my 5K. We put it into our business account. Like, let's do something over there.
Wow.
And then two months later, then we're going to like lockdown. And I always said, if it wasn't for lockdown, the business wouldn't exist. So we went for lockdown with active users of maybe 2,000 users on our platform. And the peak of lockdown were about 100,000 users.
Wow.
And then during that time, we end up meeting a lot of brands like Samsung, loads of cinema chains that we met during lockdown. Because during lockdown, what we're doing, people discovering our platform, they're watching loads of short film. And we're also hosting this online screen. I can't remember the name of it. There's you can watch films with people.
Yeah.
There's a name for it. Watch party.
Oh, watch party. Okay.
So we do loads of watch party. And then we just it's a weird one. You know when everyone's out here, out here in the park getting lit or having whatever. Me and my business partner, we were working. It's literally a normal working day for us. You get up in the morning, you're just working. So we just end up having loads of meetings during lockdown. There's a lot of we also have loads of agreement partners, partnership agreed during lockdown. Is that with the... with the promise that after we come out of lockdown, we're going to do something together.
Yeah.
And then so the peak of lockdown, 100,000 users. And then lockdown finished and obviously it dipped because everyone's went outside. I had enough of the screen time. Yeah. And it dipped. And then currently we're sitting on, our own, mobile app and website is 200,000 users.
Okay.
And our TV channel is 1.2 million.
You've got a TV channel with Samsung, right?
TV channel with Samsung and LG and Xiaomi.
And what is the, so that channel?
Yeah.
What, it just shows short films all day?
It shows short films all day. So basically the way it works is that it's called a fast channel. Basically all these smart TV that have their own, almost like their own Sky TV embedded it, mm-hmm. in it. So then it's literally, I can't remember what number we're on, actually, I should know this. So our channel is literally a mini short channel. It shows films all day. And then we make money from
advertisements. Yeah.
So then we sell advert slots to advertisers. That's what, literally, you can make so much money. That's where most of our money comes from.
Okay.
That and distribution. Our current platform is free to use until the new version that comes at the end of September. Then it's going to be a freemium. So it'll be free to use with restrictions. And there'll be a premium package, which comes with all these free premium packages.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we'll also make money from distributions.
Oh, my goodness. This sounds so sick. I'm like, I want to get involved, man. Give me some work, man. Give me some work experience. No. Where do I want to go with it next? So, yeah, I'm really clear on that. I think I'm clear on Minute Shorts, but now I want to talk to you as a founder, right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like maybe you didn't want to be a founder, but you've slipped into this, right? To the listener, you mentioned you made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
To anybody who's looking to start their own business, what are the key considerations? What do you wish you knew at the time? Or what would you tell yourself?
I'll say get a mentor straight away. Get a mentor straight. Get a very specific mentor. So let's say if you're not good at maths, or you're not good at the financial side of thing, get a financial mentor.
Yeah.
And then you can also get a mentor that's not good for you.
Can you get multiple mentors for different things.
So I would say from the get-go, get a mentor and have a friend that currently running a business or has run a business. Whether they're successful or not. If it's not successful, that means they made a mistake, they'll be able to tell you this is what didn't go right.
Yeah.
So don't just look at, let me only be someone that's done it. Be someone who... some ways be someone who hasn't actually failed.
Yeah.
They'll be able to give you the blueprint. By the way, this is what went wrong. So I'll say, before you code anything, before you do anything, get a mentor.
Yeah.
And then the second one is what do you call them? Just be very conscious with spending and almost act broke.
Yeah.
Make sure everyone, I'm broke. No money. And because everyone, as soon as they hear your founder, he must be floating with money. So founder, then also a mentor, and also make sure you're very conscious with your spend. And then in terms of mistakes, I think it's a weird one. I think try to only, put yourself, things you're not good at, get someone to do it. For example, I'm a creative in nature. I actually learned business by just running mini shorts. And so I'm not good at tech. I'm not good at, I've got a head of content. He's a film buff. He knows so much about film. I mentioned before, I watch YouTube.
Mm.
I'm not a massive film buff. So when I started mini shorts, I thought I can do it myself. I was by the way, let me just do it, whatever. And then I quickly hired a CTO, or like a tech person, so he can take over the tech side of it, because I'm not good at tech. And then I hired a head of content because he knows so much about films. So he can actually take care of that stuff. And then I can focus what I'm good at. So almost like a focus what you're good at, then that means you make less mistakes. And then also hire people who knows things better than you.
Yeah.
So you can make less mistakes, and also get business mentors so they can help people. Like, it's like a lot of like, from tax to whatever that is, you're not good at, they can kind of navigate you through all this other stuff. And also have a friend that's running a business, so they can be like almost your advisor.
Yeah, I love it. Just on what you said about making sure you focus on the things you're good at, I heard somebody said a quote, Joanna, on this podcast before, and it's always stuck with me. She said, when you work on your weaknesses, you become strong. When you work on your strengths, you become unique. So double down, triple down, quadruple down.
That is like, what's the person's name?
Joanna.
Okay, shout out to Joanna. Oh my God. I've never actually had, so, you know, also another thing is, like, so I'm one of people, like my friends always like, oh my God, you work all the time. And I'm working on something, number one, I'm working on something I'm naturally good at. Also, I'm working on something that's my passion, all this other stuff. So to me, yes, I get tired and stuff, but it doesn't really feel like work, because like, I'm doing something and I'm just like good at. And I'm also like, that thing, I'm just honing, I'm like sharpening the, I'm making it better that what I'm good at, which being a creative, like the cinema thing ideas were telling about, this is like an idea. It's like, I'm just such an idea person. So idea, and then I have a business mentor, I have a business development person where I bring ideas, how do we develop this into an actual business?
And then they help you to,
they're helping kind of like a
structure it.
So I'll bring the idea, and then my business partner always tell me, John Vier, stay in that lane. We're good.
What's the most stressful aspect of being a founder?
Oh damn. Like every day, you're constantly worrying. You know, it's crazy, because I used to worry like about it might be like competitors and stuff. Like, I'm like, as long as your things is authentic to you, so like, also like, there's enough room for everyone. The good example I give is like, if Adidas can exist and Nike can exist and Puma can exist, that means that
you
you can do something similar to someone. So like, that means that there's enough for everyone to
100%.
Eat. So my biggest worry is at the beginning when I started ministry, so I also worry a lot about competitors. But then it's not until I understand, like, as long as I can stay true to myself, and me and our team, but like, we're generally building something, like we're trying to give back. So wherever, like, someone says, oh, your thing is not making that much money, but we're helping these people. This is like the data, how many people help. So that, as long as I have that, that's fine. So that doesn't make me that stressful in terms of competitors. And then the most stressful is like, I think you just like constantly worry about, you know, are you making enough money? Are you hitting some kind of target? You know, is another company trying to steal your talent? That's very common. If you go like someone amazing, for example, a head of content, Regis, he's also a business partner. He's a amazing film curator. So sometimes I sit, I'm like, what if one day Netflix is like, yo, minute short films that the minute it's been curated is amazing. Who's that guy who's doing a curation? They can go and snap it. So I kind of be worried about like a big corporate established company is coming taking your talent.
Because they got the money.
Because they got the money to do so. They also like, so you worry about that. You worry about the money. You know, you're also like, I have people that work with me who are parents as well. So you need to make sure like, we make enough money, because they've got kids to look after. I don't have kids. I don't even have a girlfriend. So like, it's like, to me, I can like survive like whatever. But then they've got like a lot of responsibility. And I think you worry about that a lot. And then also, so you also worry about like, are we actually, you know, are we making a change? Because at the end of the day, you want to make something that isn't just, okay, making money, but are you actually giving something back?
And that's what you want, impact.
Impact, yeah. So is my goal with mini shorts is always like to impact the film industry in the right way, in terms of representation of filmmakers, and like enough, more black filmmakers, more Asian, more Arabs, more, I want to see that. So then it's almost like I worry about a lot of that. I stress that a lot of meetings. I go to like external partners. It's like, for example, even Adidas, some guys we're trying to work with, I'll come to them. When I came to them, I told them like, literally, this is our plan, and we want to make sure there's a real representation of filmmakers and talents that we're going to represent. So I worry about a lot of that.
Okay, and just on that, like, where do you see yourself and the business in the next 5 and 10 years?
Okay, cool. oh damn, I mean, it's a weird, because I think I want to develop just outside of Minute Shorts. So like, I think I want a business in the next 5-10 years to be established globally. So people talk about it as they talk about Netflix or even YouTube, you know. I want it to be like a well-known platform in the next 10 years. And then personally, whether I'm still in the business or not, I want a business to be successful. I want it to like, I want to see the business like to, you know, people talk about it as like, this is the platform that came in and actually changed
the game
mm-hmm. in terms of representation, in terms of storyline that get put out. And then me, I'm interested in a lot of things. I'm interested in architect design quite recently, quite a lot. So maybe in the next 5 years, I want to dabble myself into actually building this cinema Ades are telling about.
Yeah.
And then that's something I'm really, really considering. I'm actually, currently I'm with, what's it called? Architects Association School.
Okay.
They're an architect school in Central London. I'm doing like a guest lecture to them from, I think from next month. And so in return, they're going to start teaching me how to basically start building stuff.
If you're looking for investors, let me just get a little bit of, let me just take the little change I have, man, because I believe in you.
Yeah.
It's the person.
Yeah, so I feel like in the next 5 years, I'm gonna divert into that.
Okay.
And then also I'm gonna plug in, I'm launching a second business called Cortea with one of my best friends called Ed Sanders. I'm gonna say it now because the business, I think we're launching in November.
Okay.
Essentially, it's a invoicing company where creators get paid straight away. You put your invoice into this platform, it does all the check, and we pay you the invoice straight away.
Okay.
So we're launching in September. So I'm going to be like, I think in the next 5 years, I want to, my worry in life is always like, I don't want to be just known for one thing, because I think there's a multiple part of me, but yeah. It's also like it can help or bring change or just not influence, but like help other people. So I think like I want to express that. Also, I want to try all this part of me as well. So I don't want to be just one thing.
Yeah.
So I want to Minute Shorts. I'm going to be Minute Shorts as long as like I'm here. Maybe one day it might get sold.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it might go IPO. Like, yeah. I remember we're not thinking of it. It's more of like we're looking at literally every month. We're looking at like a target. Like, you know, one thing about, excuse me, like we're looking at the now. Like, we're like, this is what we need to do now. Sometimes, like, you know, when you're like, it's a crazy sometimes I'll be working on something, then I lift my head up. I was like, damn, what far? Then we've come a long way.
Bro, you have to.
Yeah, so I do that every once in a while, but I'm not focused. Like, let me look back, I'll look forward. I'm like, let me actually take care of today, and tomorrow
we'll take care of
yourself. Take care of yourself. So, like, that's what I do. And with Minute Shorts, that's what I'm thinking of Minute Shorts. All the other stuff, like, like I mentioned, I want to get into like architect. Interior design for cinema.
Yeah.
The cinema of the future. And then the second business I'm launching in November.
Brother, this is we're gonna link it. We'll try and link the November business in the show notes.
Yeah, do it.
This is coming up before November. I'm
No, that's fine. I'll send you that there is a Instagram handle where it's called KOTIYA.XYZ.
Okay.
So that's the new business that's coming on in November.
Okay.
But then Minute Shorts, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm here to stay until like it gets sold or it gets an IPO.
I love it. This has been such an inspirational conversation, man. I'm like so energized. Mm. Final question before we get into the quick fire round. To the listener who's listened to this, they've heard your story, like they've seen, you know, your journey.
Mm.
Like, what is like the one takeaway or piece of advice you have for anybody listening to this?
Yeah. So my thing is that I feel like I don't wait. Like I mentioned at the beginning, I'm one of the, like most of my days was like, I'll do it. Like, So is it Richard? What's the guy who runs Virgin?
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. He says something about like, I'm gonna paraphrase it. Say yes, then learn about it later. Yeah, something. Yeah, yeah. Something. This is only paraphrasing. So, I'm one of people like that same process. I'm like, if I'm interested in something, I'm like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna learn through doing it. Also, I'm not scared of like failing. Yeah. I'm literally. Also, what most of the time people scared of failing because they're like. They're scared of what people might think of them.
Mm.
I'm like, if you think I'm a failure, it's cool. Like, I tried it. So it's the same way I started at Mid in Brixton. I was like, I didn't wait to like learn how to make film or whatever. I'm like, it's an idea that I think was strong. I was like, let me just do it. Minute Shorts, the same thing. I was like, you know, it's an idea I think was strong. let me do it. This new ideas of cinema, architect. I'm not an architect. I didn't start architect.
But you know it's strong.
And I know it's strong idea. Let me do it. I know there's going to be some failing. There's going to be some things. But I'm like, yeah, because I believe the idea is strong. I'll do it. So my advice is like, don't wait till you have every tools, every skills, everything. By then you're probably like, you're overskilled anyway. So just do it. And then you learn throughout your experience of doing it.
Jean-Vier, this has been such a great conversation, bro.
Thank you.
We got a quick fire round. Are you
ready?
Let's go. Would you either promote one good one or promote like 10 average films?
Oh, no. I'll promote 10 average films.
Okay. Prioritize creative freedom or commercial success?
Bro.
This is what they're supposed to do. Quick fire.
Commercial success.
Okay. Yeah. Money or happiness?
Oh, my God. This is not cool. I'll go for money.
Do you know what? Someone said on this the other day, manappiness.
I'll go for manappiness. That's it. Manappiness.
Shout out Hayden. Have a small, loyal audience or a massive, casual one?
Oh, it's small.
Okay. Would you rather travel to the past or to the future?
To the future.
Prioritize industry recognition or audience engagement?
Audience engagement.
Okay. Focus on festival exposure or online virality?
Both.
Okay. Who has it easier, men or women?
Oh, man. Oh, my God. We have it easier.
Good. Dream dinner guest.
Oh, damn. Oh, blah. Oh, Kanye.
Okay. And then finally, yeah, like, you know, you spoke about projects. What would your dream project be? I mean, you've kind of mentioned it, but yeah, if you had a dream person or project to work on, what would it be?
What I'm doing now. Yeah. Okay. What I'm doing now, and also like, what I'm planning to do with the cinema thing.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think that's my dream projects right now. And like I mentioned, I'm one of people like, I'm not really into a lot of things. If I'm into something, that's my dream.
Yeah.
So I think the cinema thing will be my dream project. And maybe to do it with, like I mentioned, Kanye or S. Devlin. I mean, she's literally the god of like stage design.
Yeah.
And maybe Christopher Nolan as well to do it.
Oh my God, yeah. He's my favorite director of all time.
I'd love to do a short film with Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, bro.
Manifest it.
Christopher, if you're reading this.
Come on.
Exactly, the algorithm is going to find you on YouTube.
Yeah.
If you're reading this, like, just know I'm ready when you're ready.
Jean-Vier, this has been such a sick conversation. Yeah. We do have a closing tradition.
Yeah.
With everything that you've been through, what advice would you give your younger self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
Yes, I'll say I was almost like all my mistakes, I really don't regret it. Even some things like my mom's, oh my God, like, no, I don't regret it. And the advice I give my younger self, I wish I was more confident with myself. I think there's a lot of kind of like when I was younger, I was like almost a shell of myself. And I think it's not till literally my mid-20s, I was like, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say there's also is it imposter syndrome?
Yeah, imposter syndrome.
So I was almost like, I guess because I didn't really like study film or whatever. I was like, find myself. There's all things I felt like I was a fake being in the industry. But then I was like, I'm making this thing. In most cases, better than people who study it. So I wish a younger self, I was like more confident with myself. And then also the advice I would give myself is just like being confident of yourself. And also, you're never wrong with your first idea, you're never wrong with it.
Okay.
So especially if it comes in authentic to you, you're never wrong with it. It's only like when you start to think, overthink it, whatever, it starts to dumb it down. No. So more and so now, whenever I have an idea, the first one, I'm like, I hold on to that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to make sure like I stay on that idea.
I love it. Jean-Vier, where can people find you, bro?
So I'm on Instagram. So Jean-Vier Wete. So it's like a J-A-N.
I'm going to put it in the link.
Okay, there we go. I'm not going to spell it. You know, I'm so used to explaining my name because every time I tell someone, my name is Jean-Vier, like Jean-Pierre. Jean-Vier's like, they're like, Javier? I'm like, bro.
Bro, me, I'm like, my name's Bayer. They're like, Brian?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, no.
Bro, it's not that. So you find me on Instagram, Jean-Vier, and Minute Shorts is Minute Shorts on Instagram.
Yeah.
And then I'm on LinkedIn sometime.
Yeah, bro, we're going to throw it all up.
Yeah, but I think use Instagram more because LinkedIn is like, bro, you use LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
LinkedIn messages, bro. This guy, they're lethal. They send you like, you get sold all sort of things on LinkedIn.
I don't get as many as you, but I get enough.
You go to the point right now, I rarely look at my LinkedIn, which is bad. I need to start looking into it more now. But Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jean-Vier, thank you, man.
Thank you, brother. Thank
I feel like you've given like just such an insight into the industry, and you're not just giving an insight, you've given advice, and like you said, you've given the cure. Like, you've highlighted there's an issue, and you've also given ideas for what can be done to solve that issue. So BFI, Hollywood Foreign Press, all of you, you're welcome. You're welcome. Man. I want my check in the post. Yeah, I will split it. No, but guys, if you've gotten to the end of this show, you know what to do. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, share. Let us know how you found the episode. Let us know who you want to hear from next. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. Go out now and take action and find the career of your dreams. Over and out.